welcome to A Court of Three Strands, the Palatine Institute's podcast on creating Christian culture.
Through this show, we hope to provide a resource of education and encouragement for students, parents, and leaders about the revival of Christian values in our community.
On A Court of Three Strands, we'll focus on the three foundational strands that make a strong, flourishing Christian culture: the church, the family, and education. We desire to order these things around God's word to advance Christ's kingdom and so glorify him and bless our community. My name is Ron Young, former headmaster at Providence Academy and founder of the Palatine Institute.
And I'm Noah Tetzner, a curious student of classical education and podcast producer.
Through our conversations, we look forward to sharing fellowship, knowledge, and practical wisdom for his glory here on the Court of Three Strands podcast.
Without further ado, let's get on with the show.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of A Court of Three Strands. We are in our ninth season of the podcast, all about hope. And today is the first episode of a two-part series entitled The World We Have Made, Where We Are and How Did We Get Here?
Yeah. Yes. Noah, do you remember taking leadership class at
Providence? I do.
You remember that leadership model we used to have?
Like, yeah.
When I'd ask, like, what is a leader? All right. So what are the main components of that?
Well, a leader leads others.
Yes.
You have to have a destination.
Yes.
And in order to know your destination, you have to first understand where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And then how to get there. So you
can't, how to get there.
So you can have an idea of where you want. Like, we want to have a Christian culture. Right, so that's our destination. We at Palatinus too can be your fearless leaders.
Yes.
Yeah, but really we don't unless we know where we're at.
Yeah.
We won't have a path to get there. You're just so I think I talk about good friend of mine Chris out in Southern California. I don't know if he's listening, but hey Chris. He was a Navy SEAL and he talked about how he would, in Navy SEAL training, they'd come in the middle of the night, like, you know, 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And they'd put a bag over their head. They'd get in the choppers. They'd fly out in the Pacific Ocean somewhere and they'd, drop them out and they have to be back at camp, back at their post base. I don't know what Navy calls them, you know?
Yeah.
Naval base. So they have to be back at base for their morning, you know, call or whatever.
Yeah.
And they can't be late. And so all they have is their wetsuit on and they've got their fins. And so they, I don't know, they might have a watch. I don't remember all that they had, but they get dropped off. And so Chris was explaining the first thing you have to, you can't just get up and start swimming as if I know that I need to get back to base. And so I'm going to swim to base. But if you don't know where you're at, you can,
yeah.
Like you get lost. You can
right.
hurt. You can die out there.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I can't believe they do this, but it's like yeah. crazy. Can you imagine being out in the, I don't know, there's yeah. sharks in those waters. Anyway, yeah. So what they would have to do is they would first look at the stars, look at the moon, look at the any formation that they can see. So they have to first figure out where am I? And once they figure out where they're at, they can figure out how to get back to base, right? So that's kind of what we're saying here.
Yeah.
We talked about hope in a Christian culture last episode, and now I want to talk about these two things. So this world we've made,
yeah.
Like, where are we right now, and what's the history? How did we get to this part? So that's, mm-hmm. and so today we want to talk, I got to talk about philosophy in general. Right, some history and philosophy, and then next episode, part two of this, mm-hmm. will be more of like the fruit, like the results of this.
Yes,
and this is why we are where we're at.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm excited.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm just gonna make some assertions too, and so people who don't like that, they can. Suck a lemon or something. I don't know. This is a short podcast, ladies and gentlemen. And if you want to read a book about this stuff, I can, you know, email a complaint and I'll send you some information. Yeah. So some basic assertions, okay?
Okay.
One is, for the most part, people in the West had grown up through the Middle Ages with a Christian worldview. Like, it was just, that's what they grew up in, was a Christian society. Christendom, I would like to call it.
Like, even if they didn't have a personal relationship with God, the culture that they lived within was distinctly Christian.
Correct.
Yes.
Right. So if you went on the street and said, do you believe in God? Almost everyone would say yes. They might not be, they acknowledge that there's this, a God, but then they might not be, quote, religious.
Yeah.
But if you talk to them about what God they believed in or what God existed, it would be the Christian God. Mm-hmm. Right? They just, and the basic morality of it, the whole thing, it's a societal thing. And one of the things that comes with a Christian worldview is a belief that there is a creator and there's a reality.
Yeah.
And that he's made us in such a way that we can know reality. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's what truth is. Truth is conformity to reality, right?
Yeah.
Knowledge that's in conformity to the way things actually are.
And therefore, if there is truth and a reality, there's also an ideal,
yeah.
right? For
yeah.
a society, for a family, for an individual.
Or at least you can build on it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know that this is true. Okay, so that's basic. So even today, in the year of our Lord, 2024, even
yeah.
most of us, like the overwhelming majority of people, will still begrudgingly even believe that there's reality and that we can know it, right?
Right.
Even, you know, the only time we act against it is when there's a, you know, we have a moral reason to reject it because we don't like what that implication is, mm-hmm. right? But
right.
for the most part, I think we talked about abortion and Bill Barr's comedy last time or at some point, right? If you remember
yeah,
that.
I do, yeah.
Right? You know, I'm pro-choice, he says, you know, it's your body, but...
Right, with the cake and yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, if I'm making a cake and you come in and you take it out of the oven and throw it across the room and you go, hey, you wrecked my cake. And you go, oh, that's not cake, it's just batter.
Yeah,
but it was gonna be cake. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's still this uncomfortableness because there's the reality behind it, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, people will reject that reality, not because of it, the truth of it or not. It's because of some sort of belief or some sort of,
yeah,
you know, they're going to,
exactly.
right. So how do we get here? Right. So this is what we want to talk about. So this common sense realism, like if I see a rock on the ground,
yeah,
I'm not going to stub my toe on it because I believe if I hit that rock with my toe, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Right. And everything about my whole life's experience is going to support that. Even though I don't know for sure, like mm-hmm. maybe that rock's an illusion. Maybe yeah. it's all in my head. Well, maybe it really doesn't hurt when I hit, right? Maybe this time out right. of the million times you stubbed your toe, it's not going to happen this time. No,
yeah.
we all have this basic understanding of reality.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we go back, you know, a few hundred years, there was this understanding that we could know truth, in two different ways. One is through our senses, right? Through our touch, our taste, our smell, our, you know,
yeah,
our observation and right.
Yeah.
There's this empiric reality,
right,
that I can sense and
yeah,
and that's true. And then there's another group who also says, but we can also know things through reason, right? We can think through these
yeah,
things
right.
and come to truth. And now to you and I, and most every normal person on that has lived
yes
would say yeah to both of that, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
makes sense.
There's mm-hmm. some things that I know through experience, some things I know through, you know, through my senses, some things I know because I figured it out.
Yeah,
right.
Right,
you know, mathematics or something, you know,
yeah,
like right. I get it, right? I there are laws of nature that
uh-huh.
I can't sense them or see them. I can see gravity, you know, when I drop something,
right?
You know, I can measure out the, you know, how the time in which something falls 32 feet per second.
Right.
Right. You know, that type of thing. You know, and I can, and I have the ability to, we can build things in conformity with that to fly, to overcome
mm-hmm.
gravity. And mm-hmm. it's not a miracle.
No.
It's just things we can do because of our because we can know things and reason them out, right?
Yeah.
Okay, right. So that makes perfect sense, right?
Right.
At one time, there was this real problem with empiricism, the idea of the senses, and then that's where you find truth versus just pure thought.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and it's not that our senses are really knowing anything. It's our brain. You know, I don't know if you remember that Immanuel Kant, he comes up with that our brain is structured so that we can know things. And he thought he solved this great problem and, you know, whatever. And then, you know, 99.99999% of all people just don't care. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm still going to wake up in the morning, put 2 feet on the ground, get dressed and go about my daily life.
Right.
Right. What's the problem, Noah, is this. World War I happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Seriously, like this is going to sound really bizarre. All right, you know, just before World War I, I'll just go on here. In the 19th century, you had some things like Charles Darwin and the theory of evolution.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
A lot of very intelligent people they didn't like the idea of God. Because if God exists, then there's certain things that we're obliged to do.
Yeah.
We're not able to do, right?
Right.
And when Charles Darwin came up with the theory of evolution, the survival of the fittest, however you want to put it, it became for the first time in human existence where someone thought, hey, there's a way in which we can get around creation and not have to believe that God is the one that did it. Okay. You had philosophers starting to take that seriously, like Nietzsche, for instance, right?
Yeah.
And this idea of if there is no God, then everything's permissible.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if he actually believed that everything, that God was dead and everything should be permissible. I don't know. I'm not
sure. Yeah.
I'm not a big Nietzsche scholar or anything like that.
Yeah.
I do know that he believed that that's what our culture had did, is our culture had killed God.
Oh yes, that famous quote.
Yeah, yeah. And that there's this sense in which morality is, because it's based upon God, and especially the Christian God, he believed then that you know, the problem with human beings is, the real problem is not original sin or any of that the Bible's teaching. The real problem is we're not evolving. Mm-hmm. And we're not evolving because those pesky Christians and their slave morality are you know, helping the people who should be dying off.
Yeah.
They're helping the weak, right? This whole idea of charity and,
right.
And so, you know, the weak are kept alive by the slave morality of the Christians.
Yeah.
And if we really wanted to evolve, we need to get beyond that and beyond good and evil, right? We need to become Ubermen, supermen, right? You know, that idea.
Yeah.
So this is happening in the 19th century. But Europe is, and America, the West, is pretty solidly Christian, and the majority of the people, even though they might not be personally Christian, are influenced a lot by they exist in a world that's, has a Christian worldview,
right?
Christian morality, et cetera.
Right.
Well, in Europe, it was World War I happened, where you had Christian nations fighting Christian nations.
Yeah.
And it led to this, it was horrendous. And in Europe, the modern era, in a sense, came to an end.
Yeah, they call that the lost generation.
Yeah.
The ones,
Well, the ones right after. Yeah, a lot of them died. And
right.
The point is that This is where Christendom kind of broke up.
Yeah.
And it was no longer, even though the Christian past was kind of held on to sentimentally, it was no longer looked at as kind of the foundation by which civilization is built on.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then you have the nation of Germany under Adolf Hitler rejecting completely Christianity and sought a return to paganism. And taking Nietzsche's philosophy seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, he writes about it.
Right.
Mein Kampf, right?
Yeah.
He's, you know, and he's going to exterminate the Jews, and he's going to get rid of all the weak people, who are going to, who are the problem, and they're going to evolve. He thought they're the superior race, that at the time of the Adolf Hitler's taking over of Nazi Germany, they had the most PhDs per capita than any country in the world.
Wow.
Right?
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So they looked around and looked at, like, we're the best. We're the evolved ones. And so we should be on top of the food chain here. And we'll do stuff that's, it's not Christian morality, but we're beyond good and evil.
Right.
Right? We don't have to.
Yeah.
It was horrible. So in America, we won World War One.
Uh-huh.
World War One wasn't in our nation.
Yeah.
It was over there. So it didn't affect us. We came away from World War One.
Yeah.
Hey, this was pretty good. And then the Roaring Twenties and Depression, and that's not good.
Yeah.
But then World War Two happened. And when we got into World War Two, it kind of brought us out of that depression. And we won and had the only viable economy in the world after World War II. And we had all this prosperity and everything's great. So Europe is in shambles. It's rebuilding Europe apart from a Christian worldview.
Yeah, right.
When the Nazis took over and, the communists were on our side for a while, but the Nazis hated them, but the Bolshevik Revolution had happened earlier. You had a lot of people sympathetic to communism, socialism, communism. The universities aren't hiring.
Yeah,
they all came to our Ivy League schools to teach.
Right.
So the communist socialist kind of groups, they come and infiltrate the United States, this Christian nation who's just come off the heels of a victory, and we have this world domination, and everything's great. Like, this is good. The problem is that this opened the door to a different form of political ideal.
Yeah.
And it revolved not around a Christian God. It revolved around materialism.
Yeah.
And so it was about finding a just society based on the equal distribution of material goods.
Yeah.
Apart from any kind of Christian idea or morality.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's interesting.
So that's happening even in the midst of our,
Right.
Height of prosperity and goodness. And
don't you think, Mr. Young, that like at the same time this is happening, the American family is destroyed as the center of one's life? I mean, yeah, or I should say maybe not destroyed, but it's like, throughout all of Western history, the family unit with two people, a man and a woman married and, multiple children and so forth. That was like the center of a person's life.
Yes.
And I guess as, industrialization happened, I feel like we lost that.
Yeah, that's a good point. So with the Industrial Revolution, I mean, we've never figured out how to live in since the Industrial Revolution. So the Industrial Revolution is taking it has taken the man out of the household.
Yeah.
To go work and then come back rather than the household developing the economy. It's only been in recent times, like in the last few years, I think, that we have more people living in cities than in the country. But up until, recently, there was at least a balance, right? Mm-hmm. People moved to the cities so they can go work in cities, and in the rural areas, people still tend to farm and there's family businesses and things like that. So they were there.
Yeah.
The one of the issues too that we'll just bring up is in World War II, you had all the men go. So in World War I, a lot of men from America went off to fight, but not a lot, not a ton.
Yeah.
In World War II, it was like a whole generation of men going off to fight.
Yeah.
And so who's going to be building the munitions? Well, women went and worked in those men's jobs.
Yeah.
Right? There were two traditionally men.
Yeah.
So now when you come back, you have this, do I want to not work? You know, this.
Right.
Most of them did go back to, you know, getting married and having kids.
Yeah.
But you have this tension now from that point on is like, what, how do we exist in this new world of, you know, men and women both perhaps working or having those pressures to work or what have you.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the beginning of an erosion in the universities first of American understandings of things, which first and foremost included, the abolition of God. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it started in our elite universities. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, so the generation that comes up post World War II, that is the baby boom generation, then becomes faced with their college. If they've gone out, they go off to college, they're now being faced with not just communism, Marxism.
Yeah.
It's not cool to believe in God type of thing.
Yeah.
The university is becoming more and more secular. You also have things like postmodern thought coming along. By postmodern thought, I mean like this. Okay. So we talked about truth is being in conformity with reality. And knowing that, knowing truth means, you know, the truth includes the essence of a thing, right? So we know this.
Yeah.
What the postmodern folks have done is say, you know, since there is no God, there's no real truth.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And so any kind of truth is just a claim of truth.
Right.
It's not about reality.
Is that what they call relative truth, or is that something else?
Yeah, so to speak. Like, yeah. At first it was like, well, you have a truth that's true for you, and I have a truth that's true for me.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of ridiculous, but
yeah,
you know, there are some parts of it that are true, but, you know, true enough to help it stick.
Yeah.
But it's not completely true. It's like it's a partial truth, mm-hmm. that turns out to be a lie. Mm-hmm. Right. There is objective reality, and you can't make objective reality a subjective truth. Objective reality is an objective reality, and that's either true or not true.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah. There are ways in which we might relate to certain things.
Yeah.
Subjectively, and that's the part where there might be, this is true for you, and does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So what I'm saying is that what these atheistic folks have done in not believing in God and kind of trying to construct reality. This is what they see as reality, as being a construct of human endeavor or human language even. Okay. So do you remember the beginning of modernism, a lot of people point back to like Francis Bacon.
Yeah.
And Francis Bacon's the one that says knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Right. The more you know, the more power you can have over reality, over nature. You know what I mean? You can build an airplane that'll defy the laws of gravity. Well, it works with the laws of gravity. It doesn't defy.
Yeah.
But that's the idea of knowledge is power. Well, what the you know, folks Foucault and some other postmodern philosophers, mm-hmm. were trying to say is that any kind of knowledge of truth is really a claim. It's a truth claim, and it's a ploy for power. So they would say that power is knowledge. Like, the ones in power get to make knowledge. They get to control the narrative. Yeah. They get to tell you what to think about stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. So instead of a society bent on seeking to know truth.
Yeah.
They're saying that in reality, it's people in power get to make reality by telling you what to think about it.
Right.
And other philosophers like Derrida think that the goal of academics then is not to learn truth, but to deconstruct what people of power have said things are.
Yeah.
Right. So you go back and you deconstruct this as just a language game, right? You know, and we're gonna we're going to relabel things. We're going to rename things.
Yeah.
For this, and Derrida would say, we're doing this for the sake of justice. So just to put it, an example.
Yeah.
Okay. In, up until yesterday, you had men and women.
Yeah.
And, sex and marriage, right?
Yeah.
Was part of, so there's a reason why there are wombs.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And testicles.
Right.
I know, I'm sorry, I'm saying this very bluntly, right?
Yeah.
But there's an essence to our bodies.
Right.
And they have a they fulfill a purpose, a function, right? Mm-hmm. So sex, the essence of sex or the purpose of sex is to procreate, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Now, it can be a pleasurable act in doing so.
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
Right? So with the advent of things like birth control.
Yeah.
Trying to take away the essence of the act and making it about pleasure rather than about procreation.
And that's interesting because in that specific example, it's almost like the essence of that, which is having a child, is like a side effect.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like something that happens sometimes or mistakenly so.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, you know, now that there's this possibility of having sex without the quote consequence of children.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Right. You know, and they're trying really hard to make it so there's no consequence of disease either. That's been a difficult thing. And there's, you know, but
right.
you can now watch TV ads that talk about how you can control your whatever disease you might have and it's fine to keep having sex with other people.
Yeah.
Weird stuff. Okay. So now there is no real essence to sex,
uh-huh.
it's generally just about pleasure. Why would we say that you can only have sex with the one you're married to? Right. And you can see, well, marriage had a lot to do with having a home for children.
Yeah.
But if you're not having children, why, you might as well just have sex.
Right.
Well, if sex isn't about needed for children and marriage, well, shouldn't any kind of sex be okay?
Yeah.
Shouldn't sex between two men be okay or two women be okay if it's not about children?
Right.
Well, if they can have sex together, why can't they get married? Since marriage doesn't really have to do with children anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They could have the benefits of the government's, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Even though the laws were built so that people could have families and pass down civilization.
Yeah.
Now the laws are meant to protect the rights of people to be able to have orgasms.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, does that make sense? I'm being very crass here. I'm sorry, people, but this is kind of where we're at.
100%.
So now there's a second thing that's been happening too, and that's with the language. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you recall, you know, a homosexual sex between men used to be called sodomy and still is sodomy,
mm-hmm.
right? There are sodomy laws. It's against the law to sodomize another person.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So, what if we didn't talk about people who were sexually attracted to the same sex as sodomites and called them homosexual? So we're not going to talk about the act. We're going to talk about their being, right?
Yeah.
So now it shifts from action to being. And now if I talk against something.
Yeah.
I'm now talking about their being rather than their
right.
act. And now any talk against that is now labeled hate.
Right.
Do you see how this was all a language game?
Yeah, it was. Same thing with the abortion issue, of course.
Yes. And they're trying to be very careful with it. They're pro-choice, not pro-abortion.
Yeah.
And then they want to talk about it as being a fetus or a clump of cells, not a baby.
Yeah.
Even though any other situation,
Right.
Yeah, you're a married couple. I'm pregnant. Yeah, I'm going to have a baby. It's a baby in there. I refer to it as a baby. You find a, get a name for the baby, you know, that type of stuff. And you don't want to call it anymore. So you want to call, you want to find out the gender, you know, the sex of the baby. Right. So it's like, call her a her or him a him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it does, it just, it's, this is reality, well, but the other thing is not reality.
Because like with abortion, you know, nobody can say, okay, like murdering a child, everybody can say that that's bad, but what if it wasn't a child?
Yes, correct.
You know, then, you know, what if it's a fetus, you know, or whatever you want to call it? Yeah, I totally recognize that. Once you change the definition and wording of things,
yes,
lets you get away with more, you know, literally.
Yeah. And so the philosophers who are bringing this kind of stuff up and the wanting to deconstruct and wanting to play the language game, or at least be aware of the language game that people are doing, they thought it was going to be for justice, right? So that we can, you know, not exclude people or, you know, again, this is without a Christian worldview.
Yeah.
We got to just make up everything. Right. So first you have to deconstruct the Christian worldview and then bring on what someone's justice.
Yeah.
Now think about that. Yeah. Who's justice? Right. Christian justice?
Uh-huh.
What justice looked like for the last 250 years?
Mm-hmm.
No. It's like we're trying to figure out what justice is at the same time. Right. It doesn't make sense. So we know that as Americans, we understand, you know, justice is this blind lady with the scales.
Yeah.
Right? Justice is blind. Uh-huh. Everyone is equal under the law. That's equality. Well, the new justice seems to be equity, that there should be the same kind of outcome for all people.
Yeah, right? That's right. Yeah.
But because blind justice isn't, quote, working in that way.
Yeah.
We have to now take off the blindfold and make choices for the oppressed. Make choices.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Right? It's not justice.
Right.
It's really racism. Let me back up a little bit. So this is how the Marxist communist kind of infiltration has now merged with the postmodern view of things. Okay. Karl Marx, and the socialists, from long ago, looked at history in terms of always a clash between the those in power and those not in power. So you had the Bolsheviks and the overthrowing the bourgeoisie and right. And then there was, and it kind of comes from Hegel, the philosopher before, who looked at it as you have the ideas, you know, there's a thesis and there's the antithesis, and then they combine to make a new synthesis, which becomes the new thesis. And then there's a new antithesis, and that's how history works its way out.
Yeah.
And he was saying it, they were saying it has to do with power and money, material things.
Yeah.
And that the eventual thing that's going to collapse is democracy and capitalism. That's going to collapse.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to make way for communism, which is going to be the ultimate. Right. That's right. So the problem has happened is that the places that communism has been tried, it's just failed miserably.
Yeah.
And with the collapse of the Soviet Union in the 1990s, you had socialist communists kind of going into other areas, like, well, maybe it's not about material things, it's about oppression, right? So this has become the new thing, right? So so like, if just to be political once again, this is a really political show today, right? The idea is that victims, so morality is no longer about right and wrong according to what, you know, the Christian consensus used to be, or the Bible, or even what Americans all assumed like yesterday.
Yeah.
It's now about the victim versus the oppressor.
Right.
And victims can do no wrong and oppressors can do no right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
It makes sense. Yep.
So if you are being oppressed and you act out in violence, damage billions of dollars worth of property, kill people, you're supposed, that's okay because it's for justice.
Right.
But if there was a group of the quote oppressors, let's just call them white men, and right. white men are upset about something,
they're always up right? to no good. Yeah.
Yes.
No,
I'm kidding. No matter how aggrieved they really are, or no matter how just their cause is, they're not, it's not going to be looked that way. Mm-hmm. They're going to be racist whiners. Were does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what happens. It's all about victim oppressor things. You know, one of the fruits of this, and I know we're going to talk about fruits next episode.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you'll see is that young women are increasingly becoming more and more liberal as they come out of high school and into college and out more and more and more liberal, and young men are becoming more and more conservative. And there's just this big
interesting
gap.
That's really
more than any time in history.
Yeah.
And part of it is, you know, things like the perception of Roe v. Wade being overturned or what have you. But the reality is, if you're a man, by the virtue of being a man, are this new world that we're in, you're an oppressor and you're the problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of young men who've kind of figured that out and they go, this is stupid. And they're turning, they're going rightward. And you have a lot of women who like being the victim.
Right.
Like, I don't want to have to be responsible for things.
Yeah.
I want to be able to blame others if things aren't going well. Right.
Yeah.
So overwhelmingly, like I think Nancy Piercy in a recent Twitter thing I saw, and I think it was quoting from her own book.
Yeah.
She was looking at the voting patterns of people. So like, if you look at, men, men overwhelmingly, married men overwhelmingly vote Republican, married women vote Republican as well. Single men vote Republican, not as overwhelmingly, but still pretty overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
And then you have, married women vote Republican, single women.
Yeah.
Vote outrageously Democrat.
Yeah.
Like it's not even close.
Yeah.
And it's just a weird thing. Weird. But part of it is you have, if you're usually, if you're married or if you're still live at home or what have you, there feels like there's stability with them. That was the other one, is women who are divorced tend to vote Democrat, women who are married vote Republican. And then part of it is security. They look for government to be their security because there's not a husband that's, or a dad taking care of them.
Right.
So, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it seems as though we have a nation of victims.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well, see, that's the thing is if you can prove yourself as being a victim of something, then you can gain the sympathy of people. But if you're successful or if you're doing things, it's called privilege, and it downplays any kind of work that you've done for it, and you'll be judged by the color of your skin. Mm-hmm. Right. And and it goes both ways in the sense of, like, I know black men who hate this.
Yeah.
Because the assumption is that you're a victim of white people.
Right.
Right. Or they think that they're being judged in a way that because they've got success, it's because they were helped out because of their the color of their skin, rather than because they worked hard and did it.
Yeah.
Right. So it goes both ways. Like, it's a stupid ideology.
Yeah.
And so here's why I'm bringing it all up, right? So this is where we went through this whole, World War I was the big thing in Europe. Yeah. It was Vietnam for us, right? When we kind of, when we had the elites who come from, you know, the elite universities who have been taught by the communists and the socialists and the postmodernists, did everything in their power to go against the United States as we were trying to stop communism.
Yeah.
We were taught that we lost Vietnam.
And in one of the, this is like a separate podcast episode, but one of the things I've been fascinated to learn recently, Mr. Young, is that during the 1960s, American veterans were not held in high regard by people.
No, they were, they were called baby killers and all sorts of stuff. All sorts of things were, none of it, all the investigations show that to be nonsense, but it's, you know, the John Kerry who ran for president, he made the big deal about, you know, he threw someone else's Medal of Honor over the, or Purple Heart or something over the, his fence and, you know, made a big, like, oh, he's this great liberal guy when in reality he, there's the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. I don't know if you're too young. Never mind. Anyway. Anyway, it was all very, very, very ridiculous. But the point is that the main parts of the elite universities really turned to that Marxist and then postmodern view of things. Mm-hmm. And most of the elites of the baby boom generation all went to school in those places.
Yeah.
And have wrought all this stuff upon us. So departments of education are all about teaching our children about this kind of mentality.
Yeah.
So it's really, so this is where we're at. It was, something had to replace the Christian worldview. And what we have is awful. Mm-hmm. And the main result of it is anxiety, depression, drug use, imprisonment, suicide, a culture of death. It's depressing. It's like now I'm a Gen Xer and I've fought against the baby boomers all my life. No, I'm just kidding. I'm a Gen Xer and I had a very happy upbringing. Right. And I saw some of this happening within my peer group.
Yeah.
Especially as they went off to university. Where I see it most is the millennials and others whose parents divorced or there was some sort of, or experienced some sort of disappointment in their marriage or in something else. And then they just go down the sinkhole. They deconstruct and they reject Christianity and they.
So I'm Generation Z, right?
I don't know what you are. Well, yes, I think
2001.
I think you're Gen Z.
That'd be another fascinating episode. Is like your predictions and perspective on Generation Z and what we're gonna do.
Well, what's interesting though is that so far from what I've understood is that the baby boomers have you know, it's pretty split, but they brought a lot of horrible stuff into our world in America. They're still trying to fight for power. Like, why are these Joe Biden and Donald Trump are still the ones trying to fight for election, and you have the majority of the population, all these baby boomers still supporting it. And I think younger people are going, really? Like, really?
Yeah.
Could you guys just leave? Like, they're holding on to it. Like, they're literally barely able to walk and they still want to hold on to power and steer our country into greater and greater danger.
Yeah.
It's just so they can pat themselves on the back and look at the good things we've done. Right. Was it C.S. Lewis who talked about the, you know, an evil tyrant you can put up with because an evil tyrant will get tired of their evil. And so you can have a break.
Yeah.
But when people are tyrants and they think they're doing it for our good, they never stop.
Wow.
They never stop. Yep. They really think they're doing this for our good. They really, really think it would be great for America that we can kill the children in the womb. They really, really think that it would be okay to get, you know, little kids to mutilate their genitalia so they can become something other than what they are. I mean, they think this is good.
Yeah.
And so they'll never stop. Even though, like, look, it's horrible. Like, just, okay, I'd even concede, like, hey, let's just do this. Let's just put aside
your
ideology, and I'll put aside my Christianity for just a second. And let's just look at statistics.
Yeah.
And do you see the plain data?
Well, and it's...
We're in debt up to our eyebrows.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be alive to pay for it. So don't worry. They don't worry about it.
Yeah.
We got all these people trying to kill themselves.
Yeah.
They've abandoned the idea of marriage. They're not having kids because they think it's horrible. They're stupid, right? Yeah. I mean, the way the... educate, like, we keep dumbing down everything and people think they're smart.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, there's a,
like they took, I remember at a time when they took the SAT and they recalibrated it. So like,
oh, you're kidding. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So you know, the 1200 that this student got would have been like a 950 back in the 80s. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like it was recalibrated like that. And then they started making the test easier. So it's a double whammy.
Yeah.
And so people are coming out of high school thinking they're pretty smart. And then, you know, their parents are shaking their head like, what are you?
But when they're classically educated and undergo a rigorous education, all of a sudden they go to college and go, wait a minute, high school was easier than this.
Yes. Because... Or college was, or high school is harder than college.
Harder than college, that's what I meant. Yeah.
We just talked about that. I don't know if we did that online or, but
yeah.
Yeah. We just had this alumni group and guy just graduated from UW Madison. I was talking about his most academically challenging year was when he was at Providence Academy. And it's because ever since the No Child Left Behind,
which federally
mandates that students in public schools are going to graduate college or career ready.
Yeah.
All of them. Well, how is that possible unless you lower the standards? And that's what they've done.
Yeah.
So high school standards are way, way low.
Yeah.
And so colleges are like going, we still have to exist.
Yeah.
We still have to bring college students in here, but they can't pass our freshman courses. So they realigned everything, which is why you can't get a good job with a bachelor's degree anymore. You need a master's degree or a PhD. Why?
Yeah.
Because it's been dumbed down so much. And then we wonder, why is everyone in debt so much? Well, they have to get a master's degree to do what they used to have. Back in the day, when you graduate high school, you can get a good job.
Yeah.
Now you have to get a master's degree.
I know.
And I know technologically things have changed, but in general, it's because we've dumbed down everything. And then people get a master's degree and they think they're really smart. It's like, no. Do you understand how low the standards are?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I just saw this big online. I know I'm going on a tangent here, Noah, but it's really frustrating to me.
It is. Yeah.
Talking like this group of people talking about, you know, seminary being like, you know, you shouldn't have to go to seminary and you know, you can, there's all this stuff available. And why would you need to learn the, you know, Greek or Hebrew, and they think, and so these are stupid people who have had a horrible education, but they think that they're really well educated,
right?
Do you know what I mean? So they don't even know what they don't know.
No,
they don't know the languages and they don't know how important those languages are, so they're making judgments about it. And it's killing me. It's killing the church.
And that's like critical to understanding the context of the Bible.
Yeah.
Those languages. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was going to seminary, I hate, sounds horrible. This is a really bad episode. I'm sorry.
But that's okay.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
In order to get into my MDiv program, I had to already have competency in the languages.
You're kidding. Wow.
So you would take, you would study before getting accepted into the MDiv program so that you can take, so that when you start day one, being able to exegete passages in the New Testament in the original language.
Wow.
So now you have all these MDiv programs or Masters of Religious Studies or Theology that they don't require any languages at all.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah. So they could go, oh, look, we both have MDivs. Yeah, but yours doesn't mean much. right? You know, I just want to go.
Yeah.
And I go, we had prerequisites in philosophy. Like you had to have some philosophy in order to be accepted into it. And if you didn't, you had to take, this prolegomena to theology or something like that, where you're taking these philosophy classes and so that you can think.
Yeah.
So that you had to and now look at it. It's like there's nothing. It's like just do anything. I don't know. I get frustrated because we're doing this to ourselves.
Yeah.
We're dumbing down everything, including theological education. And then we pat ourselves on the back about how smart we are because we have all these advanced degrees. Mm. Well, your degree doesn't mean much.
Right. Right.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. To get accepted to college back in the day, like think back around our founding, to get accepted to college, you had to translate a passage from Greek into Latin and then from Latin to English.
Oh yeah.
Right. And vice versa. Like, so you had to have a working knowledge of Greek and Latin in order to get into your undergraduate coursework.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, even in like grade schools, you know, children were memorizing portions of the Constitution and the nation's like classic documents, Declaration of Independence and preamble to the Constitution. And
I have some older neighbors here in Green Bay, and they remember having to take Latin when they were in high school.
Wow.
In public schools.
Yeah.
But like, it's just all. And so people are making decisions about the education who have never been educated.
Yeah. It's a dead language, right? No, just kidding.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Thank God for the revival of classical education.
Yeah.
It's going to, it's so needed.
Yeah.
It's so needed. Anyway, I know this has gone on way into a tangent. And the theme of this episode this season is hope, right? So just so you know, this isn't just the rantings of a Gen X guy who's frustrated with where things are in the world.
Yeah.
And I am.
Yeah.
I do want to say that there is hope.
Yeah.
Right? There is hope. And we'll end here, right?
Yeah.
So we see where we are now and where it's come from, right?
Yeah.
And there's hope because the church is going to outlast all of this, right? In 100 years, there might not be United States of America, but there's still going to be a Church of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
100%, yeah.
There's 100 years from now, the educational institutions that have long provided things might collapse, but God's people are still going to educate themselves. Do you know what I mean? So there's hope, but I think there's even more immediate hope. And that is that because, and this is what episode 2 is going to be about it's episode 3 of our season, but it's episode 2 in this two-parter, is we're going to talk about the fruit of all this.
Uh-huh.
And we are now living at a time where the fruit of disbelief, the fruit of this secular humanism, this fruit of this postmodern Marxist, is becoming not merely obvious, but painful for our society. Mm. Like it's getting to the point where I think we all can recognize that we cannot continue to live like this.
Yeah.
And so that gives me hope because the Church of Jesus Christ has answers.
Yeah, that's right.
And as we just were talking about education and classical education, you know, the Providence kids went off to Madison and well, that was easy, right? Is the world, because it's been dumbing down and because it doesn't possess the virtues that are needed to sustain good culture and life, those virtues are being instilled within these students. It's going to be easier and easier for us to take over, to build a culture, a counterculture. So that's what next episode will be about. So
awesome.
All right. So I apologize at my ranting, but this stuff really does fry me, I have to say.